welcome to Al Berman Live from a studio apartment, episode 111, and it's been, it's been over 2 months, 2.5 months since my last podcast, and before that there was like a month or something like that. You know, there's been, some of you might probably already know, some of you maybe not know, maybe there's nobody even listening anymore, I don't even know, but my mom passed away. She passed away August 16th. I did my previous podcast August 10th, and she passed away August 16th. So blame her. Blame my mom. Blame her for not having me do the podcast. Let's just blame her for everything. I blamed her for everything else. Why not blame her for that? Yeah, so I'm trying to, you know, I want to keep this... you know, I want to make this funny in a way. I want to make it amusing. I want to make it entertaining. How do you make your mom's death amusing and entertaining? But I want to make it, keep it real, keep it nice, keep it sweet, you know, poignant. It's been very, this is the hardest thing I've ever been through in my life. And I had a very complicated relationship with my mother. I didn't see her very much. And I'd say in the last 20 years, I didn't see her very much at all. And, you know, that's just the family stuff that I won't get into. But we talked on the phone quite a bit, and we didn't really have that much to talk about, but, you know, she was my go-to person for, my mom was my go-to person for, like, if there was an expiration date on some food, and, like, say, for example, say I had cottage cheese, and what's today, 26th of October, something like that, and say the expiration was October 25th. I call my mom up, hey, Ma, the expiration date was October 25th. Okay, you think I can have it? And then she would go, oh, I don't pay attention to expiration dates. You know, she goes, she just used common sense. Because I realized later on that she came from a time when there were no expiration dates. You just had to use your common sense. You had to smell things and look at things. And then, you know, lawsuits happened and people started claiming they got sick, and then companies got sued. So now they stamp, you know, best if used. But then people like me, who don't remember ever not having expiration dates, it's possible there weren't when I was growing up. I'm not sure, but I just seem to remember always having them. People like me think, like, oh, as soon as it's a day late, I'm going to get free, deathly ill and fall into a coma. That's the way people like me think. Because... I mean, that's the way methinks. Methinks this way. So, you know, and you know, it's funny to be talking about cottage cheese about my mom. And those are the things I used my mom for. I would call her and, you know, I love my mom, obviously. Well, obviously, maybe, you know, nothing's obvious here. I loved her. I didn't particularly like her that much. It's very difficult. She was a force of nature. My mom was a force of nature and, very talented person, an artist, although she refused to call herself an artist. When I was a kid, it boggled my mind. It confused me, because she would paint, things and she would draw and sketch. She did a very famous, in my neighborhood, sketch of my dad sleeping on the couch in his underwear, holding on to his crotch, and it was such an amazing likeness, and I'd love to get a hold of that and frame it. It swept through my neighborhood. It was such a big deal, because nobody else in the neighborhood that I knew of could do stuff like this, and I was so proud of my mom. But she would always, like, correct me. Like, I'd say, my mom's an artist. She goes, no, I'm not, because she was such a perfectionist that she felt that she felt she had to be perfect. She wanted to be perfect, and you can't be perfect in this human form. Right, Ma? It's my mom. She's still around now. I talk to her occasionally. Now she's perfect because she's in her completely original source kind of thing. She's, you know, floating around with her friends up there or around me or wherever she, you know. And so it's really is the hardest thing because, you know, it's your mom. You know? And it's my mom. And you know, I just, no matter what our you know, problems were, it's a core thing. And it really, you know, it's, I don't want to get emotional here, but it's painful to not have her around in some ways. And in some ways it's a relief, you know, to tell you the truth, because, you know, some of the judgments were like, hey, you know, are you on my side or what? I mean, what are you worried about? So I had to fly to, they lived in, my dad still lives in Michigan. Now, we're not from Michigan, we're from Jersey, but my sister had invited my parents to live with her after her husband died a few years ago. So my parents moved in, and they live, it's a little country suburb of Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's a beautiful area, at least, you know, when I was there, it was summer, and very green. I don't want to be there the winter, it's ridiculous. But I flew there. I flew all the way there. I was actually planning to go to visit anyway. I already had a trip planned. And but what happened was my mom took a turn for the worse, and my sister called me and said, hey, you know, you better reconfigure your trip here. You better reschedule it, you know, come sooner. Because had I waited, she would have been dead 3 days already, you know. So I had to change my plans, and those airlines really socked it to me too, man. It cost me like over double of what it was going to cost me already. They sock it to you, and I'm not, it's not like I'm cheap or something, but, you know, I had a pretty good deal. Thanks, Ma! Okay, anyway. I came earlier, and my mom actually waited for me. I asked her to wait for me because she was in the hospital. She said she wanted to go. She wanted to leave this planet. And, you know, and I knew she was done. They were just doing too much stuff to her. And my mom is a very proud person. And she, you know, had a lot of dignity, and she didn't want to live. I just know that she didn't want to live in an undignified life. And the night before I was leaving, I get this hysterical call from my sister. Mommy wants to die, and then she's telling the people we're going to the hospital. And I'm like, and they wouldn't let me speak to her all week. They said she was too weak, I couldn't call her. And I'm like, wait a minute, I mean, can I call her? No, don't call her. So it's just like, well, this is great. I'm isolated all the way out here in California. And then my friend Deb, who's very smart, very great thinker, she said, you know, text her and ask her to put you on speakerphone when they get there. Oh, okay. So my sister agreed to that. And basically, that was really the goodbye. That was my goodbye to my mom. She was coherent. She'd been kind of, I guess she wasn't really that coherent throughout the week. And she'd been in the hospital for a few days. And but she actually was coherent. And she hadn't eaten, and they got her some ice cream, and she, you know, made us promise some things for each other, our family, which I'm sure the, you know, families, they just break promises all the time. And I made a joke about cigars. We were having a party, I made some kind of joke, and she said, yeah, give up cigars. I said, Ma, at some point, maybe I will. And what's the difference? Enjoy your life. But anyway, we're all going to go anyway, eventually. But, we basically said goodbye, but I had asked her, hey, Mom, can you wait for me to get there? And so she said, yeah, she would do that. It's kind of funny how you, like, they could hang on. Like, you sort of have control, in a sense. Like, when you're going to die sometimes. I mean, you know, people don't always have control, but in certain situations, it seems to be the case. And so I flew. And the thing is, going from Grand Rapids from here, you leave in the morning, and you have to change planes. I had to change planes in Denver, and then I had like a 4-hour layover. I couldn't get anything earlier. And then, so I didn't get into to Grand Rapids till like 10:30 at night. And my sister is an executive at this hospital, so she's got the, you know, the back channel into the place. So we were able to go in. I said, I want to go directly to the hospital, see my mom, because I was afraid, you know, if I just go to my hotel, I mean, I was staying in a hotel, and a very lovely hotel called the White Trash Inn. If you want to know where it is, it's, I'll let you know. It's a fantastic white trashy type hotel. But, so we went right to my mom's room, and we got to my mom's room, and it was heartbreaking because she was, you know, she was pretty much almost gone at that point, and she was just incoherent. But I was, but they told me that I forget who told me, but she was asking for me all day if I was there. If I was there yet? So she was waiting, and so, you know, I completely, you know, broke down. You know, I told her some things, which I told her the night before. I told her some things that, you know, all positive stuff. You know, when someone's on their deathbed, you don't go into the negative, you don't go into negativity, right? And, so I told her, you know, some great things, you know, some things about her, and, I won't get into it now because I'll completely break down, but she, you know, and, but she was completely unresponsive. She was kind of moaning in this kind of raspy voice I'd never heard her have before. But it was like one moment of levity in that, you know, I've got this booming voice, right? And sometimes I'm not aware of how loud I am in certain situations. And at one point I was saying something and she actually shushed me. In her incoherency, she shushed me. And I was like so happy to have my mom abuse me in her final moments there. And, we thought she was going to go that night, but she didn't go that night. She went, it was the very next day. It was a Saturday, August 16th. We went back to see her, and she was, you know, was still kind of in a, you know, not doing good, you know, incoherent. And at one point we thought she was going, and then she came, you know, her vital signs were going down, then they came back up. And, and then there were these hospice people that they're going to transfer her into the hospice care. What do they call it? The care she was under was palliative, I guess. You know, where they're, I guess, where there's hope for life, and the hospice is where they know you're going to die. And so we met with these two ladies, and and then we got called in right in the middle of the meeting because my mom was going. And so I got to be with her as she left, and I held her hand. And, you know, right before she took her final breath, she kind of looked into something, you know, and, one of the hospice ladies said, yeah, they're looking at the next thing, you know, the next place they're going. And so she, you know, so she went, and, but the weird thing was, the hospice people, they offered us, that we could get a handprint of my mom and we could have an art piece made. A handprint of my mom and then our handprint next to hers, like touching fingers. But she had to take the impressions like while my mom was dying. So as my mom is dying, they're taking my mom's handprints and then they're doing, well, I don't know if they were doing the other people's. I refused. I said, this is not, no, that's not my style. I don't need my mom's handprint. My dad got it. My sister got it. My niece got it. I just didn't need my mom's handprint. And, gosh, I'm losing my train of thought here. The handprint point. Well, anyway, so she was gone, you know, she went, I was with her, I was holding her hand as she left, and it was extremely emotional. And, she's made herself known in some instances. I'm not going to get into specifics, but that, you know, there's been some communication. I mean, direct communication kind of with my other members of the family and with me, sort of like I kind of felt her presence. I kind of feel her presence right now, like she's with me. Could be in my mind, but it doesn't matter, right? Does it matter? Nothing matters. Because are we living, is this reality that I'm talking, am I really in, is this, are there other deeper realities? Like this is just a dream? All right, now I'm getting too heavy. All right, so anyway, But my mom, you know, it's so funny because my niece, well, my, I'll tell you one thing. My niece said she had a dream where at night where my mom was telling her, they were in the kitchen of the house, and she was telling, my niece said, you know, don't worry, she's fine, and she'll always be watching her. And I thought to myself, gosh, I wonder if she's always watching me, because there's kind of some moments in my life where, mom, maybe you should turn your head on the other side. Maybe you shouldn't be watching certain things. Maybe some things should not be watched. And my mom, she did believe in reincarnation, because I had talked to her about this like a while ago on the phone. And I said to her at one point, yeah, mom, like this life, you know, because I was reading on reincarnation, like sometimes you're the parent, sometimes you're the child. I said, hey, mom, this time you're the mother, but maybe next time I'll be the mother. And my mom said, I will always be your mother. And anyway, going through the grieving process, I'm told it takes a year. You got to go through every holiday and birthday and this and that and blah, blah, blah. My sister's hospice, they set me up with something out here. And I went to grief counseling? I could have gone for one-on-one, but I'm already doing that in my therapy. And so I went to a group meeting. I went with my friend Bill, because his mother died a few months before my mom. And we went there, and it was me and Bill, and then the rest were like five or six or whatever, older widows, you know, ladies that just lost their husbands. And so there wasn't much to relate to, so we only went once. It's something like, you know, people, I've lost grandparents, I've lost, you know, people I've known, nobody's like super duper close, in terms of friends or anything like that, but, this was really hard, I'm always empathetic when somebody loses a parent or whatever, you know, a parent, but I realized I never really understood how complexly deep these feelings are. And so, that's that. So mom, we'll be in touch. Got a tissue here. I'm going to grab my nose a little bit. That's that. It was actually my first time flying since my hips were, I had a hip replacement surgery, and I was told by one of my friends I should get a note from my doctor, and I did, but that doesn't, because, you know, there's the implants set off the alarm and go through the metal detector, because there's metal in the hips, and they don't care about no stinking letter. So they take you, they took me to the side, and they did a very, very thorough pat-down. The guy asked me if I wanted to go to a private room to do this, and I said no, you know, and I was kind of joking around while he was doing it, but I got to tell you something. The guy, I don't really understand what they're looking for. I had shorts on. I had nothing in my pockets. I had, you know, clean tissues, and the guy patted the tissues. It was just very odd, and he went up and down my legs, and he actually went, glazed? Is that a glance? No, not glance. He brushed my genitalia, and, was considering asking for his number. How's that for a hack joke? But when I came back, though, I was fortunate they had this other machine where you just put your hands up and you go through the, it's like 1 second. I guess they see everything, and who knows how much radiation we're getting. But who knows how much radiation we're getting right now? Like right now, I'm looking around, I've got like, you know, all kinds of devices here. You know, who knows what that's giving? All this smart equipment is giving off, you know, all these electromagnetic fields, and who knows? I don't know. Do you know? On the way to from Burbank to Denver, when I had my layover, I met up and sat with Paul Rodriguez, the famous comedian. Him and I, excuse me, him and I had a mutual friend a long time ago. Oh gosh, this goes back. This fits in pretty good with my next subject. My rock and roll days and my drug and alcohol days. I was friends with a guy who, I was friendly with a guy who was an actor, and he turns out he was Paul Rodriguez's best friend growing up. And how did I find that out? Well, when I first got sober, this guy was in the 12-step program. Excuse me, I'm breaking anonymity. Mine, not his. And this guy, I ran into him. I was like, oh, my God. He was, like, sober a few years at that point. And I ran into him at a meeting, and he was like, I can't believe you're sober. Well, anyway, a few months into my sobriety, he got killed by a truck. He got hit by a truck and died. And I went to the funeral, and Paul Rodriguez was the gave the eulogy, and that's when I found out that they were best friends. So I just kind of, Paul looked at me, I looked at him, and we never met before, and I just said, hey, you know, I used to know your friend Jesse, and he goes, oh, wow, we talked a little bit, blah, 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 and then we, then coincidentally, on the plane, we sat next to each other, very small plane, we were basically cuddling to Denver, and he invited me to come down to Latino Night at the Laugh Factory. And he said he's there a lot. He closes the show out. He'd get me on. So I'll have to do that at some point. I'll have to take him up on that. See if he actually comes through. You know. So anyway, speaking of music. My music past. In the 80s, I was a rock and roll. Minor rock and roll cult hero. Is that? No, not a hero, but a celebrity. I mean, I was known internationally by, you know, people, not on a massive scale, but on a minor scale. I had records out. It was vinyl in those days, and then CDs came out. I did that for 7 years. I was the leader, chief songwriter of the band, and we put out 2 full albums. We were on some compilation records at the We're on a French label and American label, and I just recently Googled my band, and I had to be very specific. I mentioned the American label, and I found, I found a few things. First of all, I found on YouTube somebody had uploaded one of my songs off my first album with a picture of the album cover. And it's a picture of me with my at the time we had 2 other band members, and I basically look like John Lennon. I got my sunglasses on, my hair's long, I got this weird hat on. It's my John Lennon period. I never knew that I was looking like him ever. And then I Googled this other song where we did a cover of a replacement song for this compilation thing, and I found that online, and that was amazing. And then, lo and behold, I found this, I guess it's a gentleman, I'm not sure. Somebody posted a blog this past July, and they had just rediscovered my 2 albums. Apparently they had this for a long time, and they didn't, had never listened to it, and then they listened to it, and the guy was really, really complimentary. He was singling out some songs. So he posted a link, and I hit, and so I downloaded I've got every song I've ever done now, and I've been listening to it, and it's reconnecting me to not that I'm, you know, people say, oh, you should do music again. Well, I do music sometimes. I've done some TV and film stuff. Maybe I'll have a side project with a band at some point. But, you know, I mean, this was when you do something when you're younger and you're, you know, you focus on a band. I'm not going to get a band and seriously be in a band. Plus, there's too much equipment to carry, stand up. I just carry myself. But the point is that is a very, very, a real aspect of me. And it reconnected me with an artistic part of me that I was ignoring, at least acknowledging for a long time, because I think it was too painful. I was actually embarrassed to even listen to the music for years. I haven't listened to any of it since 1989. And so now, with fresh ears and fresh eyes, I listen, and I have to tell you something. I was getting goosebumps on some of the tracks, and I was very proud. And I was very also, I have to acknowledge that all the work I did, it was so much work that I did, and my band did, and my producer did. He's now past Frank Beeson. He's producer, manager. He's on the other side. And anyway, it just made me realize that, you know, it kind of validated some things for me, is all I'm saying, as an artist. And that's what I am, essentially. I'm an artist. And not that I have to be like some kind of, you know, heavy-handed about it. It's just that this is, you know, what I am. And there's art and there's show business and art and commerce. And we're trying to marry the two here, especially with the comedy these days. And, you know, I did a really great, like about 5-6 weeks ago, a great stand-up set for this rehab place. Very proud of. I was the first set I've done since I came back to a real, honest-to-God audience that was there for comedy, and I got to riff for most of it, and it was just very rewarding. My first time I really felt like truly me since I came back, because I did about 14 or 15 shows prior to my mom's death. Which brings me back to, we're going to wrap this thing up, my mom, it is what it is, right? I mean, I hate that saying, it is what it is, but, yeah, I find myself wanting to, you know, like having the impulse to call her and say, hey, mom, you know, blah, mom, the cottage cheese, you know, blah. And my therapist says, you know, you can still talk to her. And I, you know, but it's not the same. Yeah, I can talk to her, but it's not the same. And I believe that the dead communicate with us in dreams. I've had some very vivid dreams about dead friends of mine, old friends of mine that I knew, and some very famous. And it just seemed more like visitation than dreams. And I've had a couple dreams with my mom, and some seemed like they were dreams, and maybe one or two was a visitation. I can't really tell. I think that my theory is that when we go, we go to the other side, we immediately realize everything we did, how meaningless all this is, and how we did all the things that we did right and all the things we did wrong, but not in a judgmental, critical way, in a loving way, in a pure love energy way. And I feel that's what my mom is at. Like, my mom realizes that she was, you know, extremely critical of me, but of herself most, you know, definitely too much on herself. And, you know, and I miss her not being here in the third dimension, but I feel she is with me. All right, I'm going. I'm getting redundant. All right, thank you for listening. I don't know how often I'm going to be putting up my podcast. I don't know at this point, but I will. Like, at some point, I will get on a more regular schedule. And that's that. So until next time, this is Al Berman live from a studio apartment.